Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Welcome to the one and only Mod State podcast, because as far as I know, there's only one. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Always good to be here with you. And for a second, that gave me trouble. I thought, God, what if there was more than one?
I know.
But could the multiverse handle it?
Maybe in a parallel universe, but I don't know about that universe. So,
what would it be?
I don't know. What would I look like? Would you be me and I be you?
That'd be weird.
That would be weird. Yeah.
I can dig it, though.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the worst thing. Well, before we get started, as always, thank you for tuning into the Mod State podcast, whether you are abroad or domestic in the United States. And as always, thank you for your either new listenership or prolonged listenership. We appreciate it. And as always, head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces and, you know, continue telling your friends and because we like that. So we're also continuing to get comments on podomatic.com. So we appreciate those. And, you know, that's a good line of communication for us. But as always, you know, the other ones. So
email us modstate@modstate.com. Send a bird.
Modstate.
Whatever.
At modstate.com. You heard it.
Hell, if you coerce a cat to bring me a note, do that.
There you go. Well, in terms of other weeks, this one has remained largely mild, except for, as I start thinking about it,
except for the executive branch
and the global pandemic. Yeah, I guess not a whole lot has happened. But of course, just to recap, we have, surprise, surprise, continued to see record-breaking numbers of COVID-19 cases. And Texas is at the point where they've decided to slow down the reopening. In fact, they have decided to suspend elective surgeries or revenue-generating procedures in hospitals to make room for more hospital beds. So the question then to ask is, did they know this was coming, but they decided, F it, let's just drive on and deal with it? Or do they truly not believe that it is a big deal?
I would hope they didn't know this was coming, because it's rather self-defeating to go, all right, we're locked down. No, we're not. I mean, at some point, no shit, you're going to confuse people.
Well,
what's being asked of us as citizens?
You know, like, for example, in Florida right now, Governor DeSantis is... And the guy's smart. I don't agree with him, but he's smart. But to hear him almost get defensive about his decisions in terms of, look, I'm not going to mandate mask wearing. You know, the mask has become a political thing. However, being defensive for the decisions you're making while your state is seeing record number cases is just a poor look. But you know, at the end of the day, we'll find out how everyone feels in the voting booth. But I think the last time I checked, Biden actually has an edge at this point, depending on what polls you look at. Currently has an edge on Trump in Florida. So you know, it's hard to, well, and then there's a wonderful CNN video of a town hall in Florida. I don't know if you happened to see that one.
Those ladies were not happy.
Lord, those ladies were not happy.
And they were multi-striped. It wasn't just one.
Oh no,
one type of lady.
The devil's work, the devil's laws, God's wonderful breathing apparatus, citizen's arrest. Yeah, I don't know. That's
we're talking about the state that rightfully gave birth to the Florida Man meme. I mean, here, check this latest headline here from Orlando. A Florida man calls his probation officer, threatens to blow up off probation office because he missed his appointment. Well, that's one way to clear the schedule.
Yeah, it would be blowing up the probation office is one way to not have to report.
My appointment. The building's not there. Yeah, the building's gone. I couldn't make the appointment.
I feel like you could insert the John Travolta meme looking back and forth. But so yeah, the world is still crazy. It does not disappoint. So at least Florida doesn't disappoint, but I doubt that Florida will not.
I mean, I come from the only state to have parishes instead of counties, so I'm not insulting them, but it's a Florida man's an internet meme for a reason.
Yeah.
Lots of wild things happening.
Yeah. So, but we'll
as the president would say, though, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. But yeah, as COVID cases continue to rise, I don't know if we touched on. Well, Donald Trump did have another. I don't know if it's so much of a rally as it was a. I don't know what you call it. A student meeting. Where he does continue to double down on his racist terminology for the coronavirus. You know, to me...
You're talking about Kung Flu?
Yeah, I'm talking about Kung Flu.
I'm not even sure that's funny. Like, let's say it wasn't a racial remark. Okay. All right, maybe the first or second time, it might have elicited a chuckle, but I'm going... What are you just repeatedly going in rooms with people that haven't heard this?
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I don't know, and I think there's an interesting article that was out discussing a number of GOP senator reactions to this. And I think there is a bit of apathy being created or a general exhaustion to the president in when they were questioned about his use of Kung Flu. And I think it just shows that there is, I'm not saying there's a broad waning support for the president in the GOP. That's not it at all. However, doubling down on this, I just don't understand in terms of campaign and in terms of broad reach. It's almost as if it feels like he's given up. And even though he's clearly resorting to what worked for him in 2016, but I wonder about those close to him trying to explain that, you know, 2016, there was a level of curiosity and the climate was just different in terms of people that felt disenfranchised, but it's just completely different.
They had 3.5+ years of this just exhaustion, okay? It wears you out to follow this regularly. And I started to ask you a moment ago, let's say for a second that the racial remark, you know, Kung Flu, let's say that it was remotely funny, okay? Maybe the first or second time, but I struggle to believe, how does he keep finding new rooms of people that haven't heard this before?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know they keep up with what he says.
No, I agree.
The 15th time?
Is it the caricature of him doing it that's so funny, or is it the fact that it, I mean, in a group of students, nonetheless, I mean, maybe it's because those specific type of students feel disenfranchised in some way. So it's great to hear this guy say it. And it's really funny, but I agree with you. I mean, it's like how many times
funny?
I mean, maybe within that group of people, it's like a fart. It's just always going to be funny. But
yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I'm right there with you, I guess. So you're doubling down on something that most people don't even find funny. Not because it is racist.
With Tropic Thunder, it's supposed to be offensive, okay?
Yeah.
Let's say it's that type of thing. You're going to the theater, you're sitting down with friends, knowing this, or it's South Park, okay? Let's say it's something, all right, it's one of those, if you could offend it at it, okay, dude, you're defeating the purpose of this gathering. Let's say it was Dale. I'm going, all right, do you have a second or third gear for us, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's aside from the was he kidding or wasn't he kidding remark about slowing down the testing. And then after his staff spent 3 or 4 days cleaning up that whole mess, then comes out and says, I don't kid.
Yeah. It has to be exhausting working in that environment. I mean, to say that I was not kidding about slowing down testing. Does he, I mean, I guess my question is, from a marketing branding campaign perspective, does he not realize that that's such an easy meme generation that creates itself, is not hard to understand, and can be reposted in many different varieties to reach many different demographics and segments that just makes them look bad?
Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx both came out and have said, I'm sure they were the only ones saying, look, nobody has ordered a slowdown of testing, okay? And I figured that was the case.
Yeah,
that's not really what we're driving at here. The thing for me is, here's the President of the United States making this joke to begin with. I'm going, people died over this.
But here's the thing. He said he wasn't kidding, and they've begun to pull federal funding in states for test sites. So he doubled down on being kidding about it, and then they pulled the funding for it. So it's a reality. The thing that was a joke that turned out not being a joke is really not a joke because it's really happening. So,
well, that means that, I mean, have they actually shuttered any test sites yet? Because that's what I was looking for in the last 24 hours, because that means we got another problem because Dr. Fauci's complicit there.
Yeah, but how much can he do? If it's
I mean, do you believe that he wouldn't say anything at this point? What does he have to lose? Five administrations then?
No, I mean, I think maybe we will see something, but to hold him complicit to that.
No, it's that. No, I don't mean it like. But this whole thing, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you mean.
It's one of those. How does this even become a conversation?
Yeah. No, I agree.
Maybe the testing's too good. It is.
It is from a campaign perspective.
He doesn't want to be reelected.
No, I agree with you. I truly believe that he's going to double down on everything that his base loves, but this man in his heart does not want to do this for another 4 years.
Comments about RV sale on the north lawn of the White House, talking about, I think it was 10 days ago, somewhere in that territory, talking about how high RV sales were, and then elaborating on, maybe that's what I could do. I could, you know, travel around the country in a trailer, hit the road, and then saying to Bret Baier that, hey, so if I, on Fox News, hey, so what if I lose? So what if you lose? If you lose, you go on and do other things.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like somebody who's realizing he's got a few good years left in his 70s to not only terrorize the populace, but make money off of it.
And he could. He will do very well.
He will.
And I think that I think he's...
If he lives, he will.
Yeah, weighing the pros and cons, saying, listen, I could do this exhausting job for another 4 years. And by any stretch of the imagination, his time in the White House for him has been far less exhausting than it probably has been for George Bush and Obama. However, I think the weighing that job versus, well, hold on a second. So I could get an entourage together. We could get a whole bunch of buses. I could get a decked out RV, put Trump on the side of it, and travel North America. Is that what you're telling me? And I could just speak my mind, no scripted speeches, and I could just tweet away all the time and then take off anytime I want. And take time off if I feel like it.
Right. The people that tune in, yep, that want to tune in. But I'm sure that he realized, as any of us would, this part isn't a criticism, but the reality is campaigning is a lot more fun than governing.
Yeah. Hell yeah, it is. I mean, why do you think he's really itching? Yeah. Oh, campaigning's way more fun than leading. So.
I mean, I don't want the job.
I don't either. So, what were we going to talk about 15 minutes ago when we hit record?
The SROs.
I mean, we were going to talk about SROs. I feel like there was another thing we were going to talk about. Oh, yeah. Bill Barr. So.
Very different from Bob Barr.
Very different from, yes. Very different. William Barr. So, there's been.
The Attorney General.
The Attorney General, for those who are not familiar with who he is, has been in the spotlight, I would say, at least over the last week, in regards to a number of what would appear to be politically motivated moves. The first being the dismissal of the Flynn case, and that was the former national security advisor early in President Trump's tenure in office, who effectively pled guilty to lying to the FBI, took a plea deal, and then ultimately William Barr brought in a sort of, I don't want to say special, it was a former FBI agent, former prosecutor, came in, looked at the case, reported back to Barr, and said, listen, I think there's a lot of irregularities here. This needs to be dismissed, and Barr did it. The and next...
Come out since he was coerced into that.
Yeah.
Got memos that came out that muddy the water, showing, not memos per se, there were notes, as I understand it. And it's not uncommon for investigators to try and catch somebody in a lie, mm-hmm. but because they contain the phrase, get him to lie, for instance, it was smoke in the water, blood in the water.
Yeah.
And here we are now with the Attorney General doing an interview with NPR. Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah, no worries. Again, a really good libertarians will echo this point. Don't talk to the police ever. Don't ever talk to the police.
Don't allow FISA to continue.
Yeah, FISA is also another thing. The second case was the whistleblower in regards to the Roger Stone case, where there was allegedly political motivations to reduce the sentence of Roger Stone. And then finally, the firing of the Southern District of New York's would be like director, head honcho there. And I'm failing his name at the moment, but you could probably look it up. I'll continue.
Yeah,
so a number of these things came out, and I began to listen to the NPR interview with Steve Inskeep, Bill.
Jeffrey Berman.
Yeah, Berman. That's exactly it. Began to listen to the episode with Steve Inskeep, and I quite frankly enjoy listening to interviews with Steve Inskeep. I feel like they're fairly he asks the right questions that people are thinking. I won't speak to what bias he might have. I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
but,
I was gonna say he asked the left questions they might be thinking.
Yeah, well, it's true.
And NPR,
but. They weren't so much, I would say, left questions as they were, I think, just media questions. Like, listen, it appears this way. Tell me why I shouldn't be thinking this way. And
right.
Again, I think that in this era...
I'm just making it. Yeah. I like NPR.
I think it's good. They're,
I like NPR. Just kidding.
The full interview airs on the... What's the date today? The 25th. So the full interview, I think, airs tomorrow on the 26th of June.
No, but I like the synopsis you gave me.
Well, there you go. That's pretty much all it is. Now,
No, but you gotta run down that bit again, though, that you told me. It was really informative.
Well, so in terms of the Flynn case, so at the end of the day, Barr's main point was, listen, I am the Attorney General. The buck stops with me. I have oversight of all these federal cases. I make these decisions. And what he had, so taking that with a grain of salt, that doesn't mean that William Barr couldn't go over to the president, with the White House, sit down with the president, ask what the president wants, and then execute based on the fact that Roger Stone or Michael Flynn are buddies with the president. But one thing that William Barr said, he said, listen, I'm at the point in my life where I can make the right decision. And right, obviously, is caveated with it may not be the right decision for in a specific perspective. However, it's not an illegal decision. That he said he can make the right decision and he really doesn't care what anyone thinks. And that, I think, speaks to a number of things. First, in relation to the Flynn case, he said, listen, I made the decision to bring in this this examiner, whoever you want to call it, agent, investigator, I, after these irregularities were brought up, and I made the decision ultimately to dismiss the case. He said in Roger Stone's case, there were, he had to look at the, I would say, not his words, but like the equitability of justice given to this individual based on precedent of other sentencings for similar situations. And, you know, he had pressed Steve Inskeep pretty heavily and said, you know, what makes you, you know, the media, the quote, what he called the mob, it will jump to conspiracies, right? It makes sense. If it appears that it is something politically motivated, that is the route you will take. However, and that's where he brought up, I don't have to, you know, I'm at the point in my life where I can just make the right decision and I don't care what people think. If you want to think that I did what the president wanted me, or I did what the president wanted me to do in the terms of Roger Stone, you're wrong. And I think you brought up a good point in precast where you said, listen, and I think I had brought it up to you in some way, that I think that this guy is way smarter and has way too much of a legacy at this point to be doing anything stupid like going to the White House and talking to the president about what he wants for Roger Stone. There's too many people in the White House that would know about that. There's too many potential leaks for that. And it would be a huge deal if that happened. And I think this is a guy that crosses his T's and dots his I's. And I, it's not that I agree with him, but however, I do believe that it's much simpler than the potential conspiracies that are out there. And look, I don't agree with Barr's approach to executive power, but I lean in a, and nor do I agree with a lot of his, I think the most recent, which makes me more infuriated, is his dislike for pot. So creating these antitrust cases against cannabis companies in Colorado is far more problematic to me than whether or not Roger Stone, he wants Roger Stone to get less than 7 to 9 years. Those are the things that, you know, the idea that you just don't like something, therefore you're going to create antitrust, try to bring antitrust cases against cannabis companies is far more problematic to me. But again, that was kind of my take on it. I need to listen to the entire interview, but at least the snippets that I had got, I feel a little bit better about my understanding of the situation. And I do realize that there is a, and I hate the word, but there is an there's optics to it. And I think Steve Inskeep pushed him on that. And you'll hear that he did push him on it in terms of, this is the way it looks. And at least for Berman in the Southern District of New York, Barr said, listen, that guy was an interim. He was interim anyway. He was on borrowed time. And I thought that there was really no better time than now to do it. But again, it doesn't look great. I agree. It doesn't look great when that's the sovereign Southern District of New York over there, basically conducting investigations on people that are close to Trump. But I think it's not as conspiratorial as it's made out to be. And I don't know. Maybe my head's wrong. Maybe.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think that the Attorney General came back for another stint after serving in the first in George H.W. Bush's administration to then sell his integrity down the river for a man who has Richard Nixon's face tattooed on his back. I'm just not buying that.
Yeah.
You know, so I tend to more lean in your direction of right, wrong, or indifferent. He's operating with a certain ethos that, granted, believes in heightened executive power, but is by definition within the letter of the law. Mm-hmm. That's my personal take. But hey, I definitely want to hear that interview. It'll be worth listening to.
Yeah, I think you know, I don't know that he does long interviews like that, and I was actually, quite frankly, a bit surprised that I'm not surprised that someone like Steve Inskeep would interview him, but I guess I was a bit surprised. Although when you come back to it, it definitely is a strong move on Barr's part to sit down and have this conversation, because he is in the spotlight, and I don't think that he likes being in the spotlight either. So Yeah, so more to follow on that. But yeah, so the other thing we were going to talk about, SROs. So these SROs, for those folks that are listening in countries with either police officers with no weapons or very little gun violence in school shootings, etc., a SRO is they're considered a student resource officer, kindly.
They're cops.
Nicely packaged up as a student.
It's bureaucracy for cop.
Yeah, so now it's not a student resource officer, it's a school resource officer. Yeah, I'll be honest, I have not thought about this component of law enforcement because I don't think I've ever had a negative encounter with a school resource officer. And I know the Denver Public School District actually just recently voted to cut ties with their student, and I don't know if it was with DPS, DPS is Denver Public Schools, if they wound up just cutting ties with the Denver Police Department or some sort of SRO union or organization. But either way, they've done away with it. And I didn't think much about it. However, I began to hear some different opinions on the SRO. And, you know, I don't know that there's one side of the equation that says, listen, SROs are a pipeline to incarceration. They're just another law enforcement tool. Who thinks that if, in terms of minority populations, if there's an inequitability of policing in these minority communities, what makes an SRO better? You think an SRO is somewhat above the community police officers, as if they're held to a higher standard, that they still are there to enforce the law. They still are there creating the same or policing in the same biased fashion that they do in the communities, in minority communities. So, right. And the other side is, well, first I'll start with one interview I heard an experience from a president of an SRO organization on the East Coast, and articulated the impact that they've had. And again, it's very very topical, very very like we're mentors and we've had great outcomes and et cetera, et cetera. And then there was the interesting article that you sent me about, and I'll post it in the show notes. From, and this is sort of a Second Amendment wet dream article here. This is a Parkland dad who, by Ryan Petty. So he is a board member of Stand With Parkland, a national organization committed to advocating for practical public safety reform focused on the safety of children and staff at school. He lost his daughter, Alana. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in the school shooting in 2018. So I'm definitely curious about his perspective. I need to dig into it a bit deeper, but he advocates for the continued use of SROs or school resource officers. Now, here's my problem with his article, and I am not for a second discounting the absolute grief of losing his daughter, or necessarily his opinion. But what I have, the perspective or the lens through which I see this is not so much the dad who lost his daughter in a school shooting, which is tragic, but it's the perspective of, so that's great. So we're advocating for SROs, which the last time I checked, SROs have not stopped one school shooting, just to be very clear. I don't think there's any data out there that's shown that they've been effective against the thing that he lost his daughter to, which is, again, tragic. But the lens is through the minority communities that come face to face with these SROs every day. And where he's saying, I think these are great resources. Well, I'm sure they're great resources in Parkland, in a majority white school. They're the cop on the beat that, you know, shoots ball and like tosses a baseball to your kid. Like that may be the lens by which a lot of people see these SROs, that good, it's a level of protection in our school. They're there to protect our kids. But the lens by which other people see SROs is very different. And
right, the other side of that coin, as we mentioned, as I mentioned precast, though, is he did one thing. He said is a statistical fact: none of the shootings have been, no active shootings within schools have been stopped by police officers from without, by police officers from without.
That's true. Now, the other part of that, the other part of that is the potential intelligence that has been overlooked that community police officers could have used to prevent mass shootings. So it isn't so much that they're just ineffective. It's that maybe they're not managing their resources correctly. And I'm not saying that's the case with every single one, but there's a pretty clear, track record of most of these guys leading up to these things. So it's
true. The problem with that is, though, that it leads into something that Trey Gowdy, while he was still in office, bemoaned when he was discussing his time as a district attorney, a prosecutor in South Carolina. When he made the case that, look, the biggest problem we had, he actually, a witness said this before Congress, but the biggest problem that he had prosecuting murderers of blacks and Hispanics in poorer communities was the lack of willingness in those communities to come forward. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg. Well, why didn't the community, the police have the intelligence to do their job? Well, because people didn't come forward. And the other side of that is because people are fearful of the police.
That's true. Now, we're also talking about two different demographics here. So in terms of, and I don't want to get into the intelligence gathering of mass shootings. That's not the point of this. But again, it all comes down to the perspective of the community that has those specific resources in like a school. So, you know, we can talk back and forth about, listen.
I'm just going to provide another layer.
I absolutely see that. But, you know, we're talking.
Being contrary.
No, I agree. I think it's worth talking about. But again, these are relatively affluent schools that have one kid that's writing a manifesto, posts a bunch of stuff on Facebook, and a lot of this stuff has been pushed up and was sort of discounted. Now, in a different community where there is a level of fearfulness with the police and also the fearfulness of retaliation, it's just a different. It's apples and oranges, right? There's different motivations and there's different things that are going on. And so the conversation, what I fear about with the conversation with SROs is just an incredibly misguided conversation about the efficacy of SROs. And
I feel like the conversation you and I are having would get derailed very quickly by identity politics.
100%. And I think there are absolute merits to both sides. This isn't a you should wear a mask or not wear a mask conversation, where one is clearly the right thing to do and the other is just not.
Wear a mask?
We are supposed to be wearing masks, John. So
I kid.
So it isn't a right or wrong. It's just it is acknowledging at least the, and I don't want to say acknowledging. I don't necessarily want to bring race into it. I'm going to, though. The white, maybe suburban family perspective that SROs are there to protect against bad things that are happening, and they're great. We want them there, and they make us feel good, and they're good to Johnny. You know, they're out on the baseball field. They just give us a warm, fuzzy feeling. Is that wrong? No, it's not wrong. There's nothing inherently wrong about that perspective on SROs. Then there's the other perspective that says we don't see police as mentors anyway. We don't. What makes you think that this person, for whatever reason, is going to be a mentor to my kid? I don't want a mentor is someone that my kid can confide in. that can be vulnerable around to, that can not, and a mentor is not going to be that law enforcement officer that has the full weight of the law to protect and uphold. That's not the person that A, we trust, and A, I want my kid confiding whatever that he's confiding in. At the end of the day, it comes down to don't talk to the police. And I'm not saying you can't talk to your student resource officer, but when that's ingrained in a community for very, very good reasons, and that is, it's not surprising.
For very valid reasons.
What's that?
I'm going to say for very valid reasons, because that's, I know you don't mean it that way, but that's also a categorization.
Sure.
Of all cops.
Valid reason, whatever, you know, my intention is not to.
No, I know that.
Yeah. And so
I will say this though, the viral moment that you pointed out regarding a cop with a kid was actually a white cop shooting hoops with a black youth.
No, I realize that, and there's tons of videos like that.
It does happen.
Yeah, it does. I'm not discounting the
problem across the board in this country that we've touched on, and unfortunately, I know we're going to touch on again. Mm-hmm. So I'm not ignoring that.
What I'm hoping in this conversation, not our conversation, but the broader conversation here is, because I'll tell you how
the national.
Yeah, I'll tell you how school protection safety goes in the United States, and it's typically a mass shooting happens, and there's the reaction that says we need to get rid of guns. We do not need more guns in school. We need more resources in school for people. We need to identify these people earlier. Then there's the other perspective that says, look, man, if all teachers had AR-15s, we would have no problems. And so there's this, and so what I'm a bit nervous of is that this becomes a very politicized group of people, the SROs in general, a politicized topic, that it's you know what, we're backing the SROs right. all the way, and we just miss the entire point of, you know, missing the entire point of the conversation about whether or not, or I guess the entire point of the perspective of the different communities that have SRO officers in them. So again, I have not thought hard about this, and that's definitely a sign of my at least privilege in childhood in grade school, K through 12, at least not having to ever think about it. But I mean, I probably had pot in my pocket once and didn't like them, but I've never had a bad encounter. But I think we do need to be cognizant about the experiences that other communities have had with them. And again, this comes back, John, to the point of defunding, right? That what a lot of, at least what I've heard in a couple of interviews or a couple of discussions about this, is it isn't so much that we don't like SROs. It's just that there isn't enough of other resources available to kids that are underserved or kids that probably would do better with different resources than an SRO officer. I think that's, you know, broadly,
we can't try and cloud the fact that historically black colleges and universities are historically underfunded. Since integration, we've historically, not across the board, I'm not picking on every state, but we've historically underfunded black school systems. So that kind of plays into your point there that, well, is that the best use of our resources?
Yeah. Now, I would say, I mean, again, is it
the SROs that is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not black.
It isn't that they're bad. It's that when you don't have equal amount of funding to those other resources, right? That it you're sort of left with a really wanting, right? And that's what I hope we continue to have. And I think one of the interviewers that I was listening to said it best. We just need to rethink safety. And I think also I should give credit to Ryan Petty in the article he wrote that I think he's also
say, I admire him for having the courage to write it in the first place.
Sure. I think he is advocating in the article to rethink safety. However, he's saying
right,
that doesn't mean that doesn't mean take away SROs. And you know, I don't have enough information to say, yeah, we should or we shouldn't. However, what I can certainly agree to is an allocation or more funding for resources that can help be mentors, right? You know, teachers are taxed enough to be mentors for kids who need mentorship in terms of, I don't want to say problems, that's not the right word, but who maybe are struggling or who are trying to find their way.
Well, this is about choices and about priorities, and there's a lot that we could perhaps afford that we otherwise can't if we weren't fighting in 9 armed conflicts across the globe, if we didn't have more contractors than we do reservists and active duty military personnel, if we didn't spend more on military R&D than the next 10 countries combined.
Yeah.
And I'm picking on the military here, but that's just one example. But there's a lot of choices and priorities we have to make. Maybe SROs wouldn't be a problem for those left of center if also we had one teacher per 1,000 to 15 kids.
Yeah.
Instead, it's in the 30s.
Yeah. Or maybe not the dumpster
maybe
fire.
Maybe teachers could be better mentors if it was them to 13 kids.
Yeah. Or maybe not the dumpster fire who's leading the Department of Education right now, who wants to do away with public schools entirely. But, you know.
let's just DeVos. Play with the school lunches. Then we can pay for the SROs.
God.
They don't eat.
Betsy DeVos has withstood the test of time in the Trump administration.
That's
because
longer than Rick Perry. Who'd have thought that?
Lord. We could do a whole episode on that.
Is still there
on that trash panda anyway. So yeah, well, hey, we're at about 40 minutes.
I'm an equal opportunity insulter, so I've got a joke about Donald Trump and about Joe Biden equally. They're very quick. So I'm an equal opportunity offender. So for the president, it was Donald Trump, Barack Obama, the Pope, and a school child on a plane starts going down. And, you know, there's X amount of parachutes. Well, so Donald Trump says, hey, with the country can't be without the president, grabs a chute and dives out of the plane. Barack Obama goes, yeah, well, the country still needs strong leadership, grabs a chute, jumps out of the plane. Pope looks at the little boy and says, well, look, I'm old, my time's up, so you take the last chute. Little boy goes, no, the president grabbed my backpack, so you're good.
Well, there you go.
So,
I like it.
Then Joe Biden walks into a bar, and he sees a lovely blonde sitting at the bar, and he goes over and gets real close to her hair and sniffs and smiles and sits down and goes, hey, so do I come here often? I'll be here all night.
Well, nice. Well, cool.
As ever, right?
Yeah. As always, my friend, it's an honor and a privilege to do this with you week in and week out. We're always appreciative of our listenership and actively asking you to stay engaged, reach out to us, and, you know, just even without that, just continue to listen. We greatly appreciate it. So any last thoughts or jokes?
I know you're eager to roll after that end note, but all seriousness, no, it's great doing this with you, and it's sometimes we do these folks, our regular listeners, I'm sure are used to this, but every now and then for our new listeners, we will have a kind of, not necessarily stream of consciousness, because we had a clear set of topics here, but just to kind of ping the ball back and forth or around and try and show, hey, people can come from different perspectives, discuss different things, and not end up wanting to rip each other's throats out. That's
Indeed.
Kind of the idea.
Yeah.
And because at the end of the day, it's policy discussion for everyday Americans that are out there living and in some cases, unfortunately, dying. So hopefully, even if we just maybe help shape one or two thoughts for folks, we can advance the ball downfield.
Indeed, indeed.
It's great.
Yep. Well, as always, my friend, until next time.
Bye-bye.